Sherry, you are muted. We see you speaking, but don't hear you.
Sorry about that. So we did have layoffs in the early part of the pandemic, and that stretched out for about a year. As you said, it was primarily our recreation part-time staff, but we also had layoffs in library and some other areas. We have been able to bring many of those staff back to work as we've been able to reopen our services and our buildings. And we have, to the extent possible, we have redeployed staff instead of laying off where possible. As you mentioned, there have been programs to support people during the layoff, and the city is certainly working to bring everyone back to work as soon as possible as our services are restored. So back to you, Jody.
Thank you very much for the question. A reminder to residents joining us this evening on the call, we'd love to hear from you. We'd love to hear your questions. Please press *3 on your phone keypad at any time, and you can get into a queue so you can ask a question of the mayor and city staff this evening. Those of you participating online, type a question into the question field. And if you're with us on Facebook, you can submit your question by typing it into the comments section within the live stream. Our next question is live on the phone. It's Bahram, and Bahram has a question about retired residents and property taxes. Go ahead, Bahram.
Yes, this question is a general question that people who are retired and they are over 65, they're still paying the property tax as the other people. As you know, the money that the government pay as a CPP and all the security is not that enough to pay even the taxes. So what city is going to do with retired people in this city that to be affordable or give a relief for the tax reduction for the seniors over 65?
Yeah, let me just start off by saying we're an age-friendly city. We try and always consider the needs of our senior population, which we adore and respect and admire for everything they've contributed to our city. And we're very grateful for everything they've done. And of course, we do offer programs for low-income seniors. We have an active assist program at our community centers, which allows them access for reduced rates, extremely reduced rates. And for those seniors in need, who need a tax rebate on their property taxes, there is one available. It is up to $445, I believe. And, you know, maybe best to have our director of finance talk about any other relief that is available to seniors. I know that we're offering $1 fares on My Way Transit as well for seniors. So there is a number of programs available, stormwater charge subsidy rebate as well. So there are a number of programs available to seniors. Oh, driveway and windrow snow clearing programs that you can sign up for. Jeff, do you want to speak to what other opportunities, and including, I guess, the property tax rebate that is available to those seniors who require that assistance? Thank you.
Yeah, I'd be happy to, Madam Mayor, though I think you covered them all fairly well. But starting with the seniors and property tax rebate, you're correct, it is $445 for this particular tax year. In order to receive that, you must be 65 or older and receiving the guaranteed income supplement. And obviously, there's a form, as governments like to do, to take advantage of that program. If you are accepted into that program, you automatically will have your stormwater charge rebated to you. We have the outdoor maintenance subsidy program, which will provide up to $350 to assist in outdoor cleanup or snow cleaning over the winter based on bills. And again, there's an application for that as well. The active assist program will provide a non-refundable credit of $275 per qualifying person per year for recreation type programs. The drive can apply for that and have the windrow, which is the piece of this big snowbank at the foot of your drive after the snowplow goes by, get cleaned up. The affordable transit program, we have two of them. We have the one during non-peak periods for $1 a fare, and then we have the normal one, which is a 50% discount on the Presto MyWay monthly pass. And I think that pretty much covers it. So back to you, Jody Shanoff.
Thank you very much. Thanks for that question. Listeners this evening who would like to ask questions of the mayor or city staff can get in line by pressing *3 on your phone keypad. You can type a question into the field, the comments field, if you're listening to us live online, or if you're with us on Facebook, use the comments section to type in your question and we'll get to that. Our next question has come to us through Facebook Live. Tony asks, what was the biggest area in our loss of revenue?
Oh, that's an excellent question. So operational deficit, I highlighted that a little bit earlier, but certainly transit was a big one for us. You know what? I'm going to pass this over to Jeff Jackson, who I know can speak to it very ably on each of the categories and what the losses were that we incurred. But about, you know, the greatest losses were generally on the operating side, and transit would have been one of the largest. So, Jeff, over to you, and maybe you can describe some of those mitigating measures that we put in place. I highlighted some of them earlier, but why don't you respond this time to where our deficits exist. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Madam Mayor. So the largest one, yeah, obviously was transit, because transit, for the early part of the deficit, we had the closed door the center door policy, where people went in by the center doors and they couldn't actually go up and put their fares in. So there was some loss during that period of time. But in general, our revenue is now back at about, and Jeff Wright can comment on this shortly, at about 50% of what ridership would be back in 2019. So that was the biggest one. Recreation programs, obviously, with our need to close our facilities, there was money lost there. Parking, you know, for a period of time, we weren't collecting parking fares, and, you know, we provided exemptions for people to allow their university students to park, you know, on the streets where normally we would have issued tickets. So enforcement revenues were down significantly. And as well, our provincial offenses office has been closed. So even though people had tickets, they couldn't get hearings, and we didn't get the revenue from that. So I think that's a reasonably exhaustive list of the areas, but probably makes some sense for Jeff Wright to talk for a minute or so just about some of the challenges that's being faced by transit in terms of the ridership coming back.
Thanks, Jeff. And yeah, you mentioned the significant decline in transit ridership. Certainly the public health restrictions throughout this pandemic have had a significant impact on transit ridership. You know, most particularly the stay-at-home orders is where we saw the lowest transit ridership. Transit ridership is starting to recover, and, you know, we are still in that recovery phase. Jeff, you mentioned 50% transit ridership recovery, and that's sort of been an average of where we've been this year over 2019 service levels. We have seen that increase a little bit with September back to school, more people returning to work, but that is sort of tampered as we sort of stay in this middle of the fourth wave kind of zone right now. So it is still a struggle on transit ridership, and, you know, we're optimistically hoping to see a 65% plus ridership level of our 2019 service levels later on this year. So that's our target. It's going to be a multi-year recovery on transit ridership, so we don't expect, you know, full recovery till at least 2023. Of where we would see ourselves back into 2019 ridership level. So it is a significant impact, the biggest impact to the city's financial recovery plan. We've been fortunate to receive safe restart funding to offset some of those losses, but it is a long multi-year recovery, and we're confident that we will be able to meet those ridership challenges over the next little while by matching service and looking at how we deal with service levels. So just a little bit on transit. Thanks, Jeff, and back to you, Jody.
Thanks very much for the question. Our next question is live on the phone. Clifford is on the line with us, and Clifford has a question about moving funds around within the city. Clifford, go ahead.
Yes, hello. How are you today?
We are so well, Clifford. Thank you. Please, what's your question? We're here to answer your questions.
Okay. My question was, we were talking about the parks and services earlier, and that a lot of funding has been going there, but Mississauga has a pretty good structure of parks and services. Now, if we're going to, if we could transfer some funds to the transit system instead of, like, I know you guys have a good maintenance cost, but we have a good structure there. So instead of spending money on an existing structure that is already excellent in Mississauga, could we not transfer some of those funds to, like, the transit system or to other, like the 401 expansion that's going on right now?
So it's a good question. So the good news is the 401 expansion is being paid for by the provincial government. That's one of the 400 series highways, and that's their responsibility, not ours. But you're quite right. The transit is our responsibility, and it is an area that we experience significant loss because of the loss of ridership and because of rear entry. Just to keep people safe, we allow them to enter through the rear door, and they actually, for a period of time, a few months so during the height of COVID, we offered free transit. So we did take significant losses of about $7 million a month, but we did receive some restart funding from the provincial government for our transit losses. And to reallocate from transit to other departments, or other departments rather, the transit, you know, I would suggest you to try, take a look at our budget allocator on the city's Mississauga.ca budget/budget and take a look at the budget allocator. It allows you to move money around and see the impact on the city's budget generally. So to take from one department, and I think you were suggesting parks and parks and rec and services, of course, parks have been such an important component of our lives this year during COVID, and I know myself and many people enjoyed walking through our trails, etc., and it was so necessary for our physical and mental health during COVID. But, you know, we have budgets to maintain a quality of life that our residents enjoy and expect from us, and so we offer, you know, it would be to take away from one and give to another. I think then people would criticize us for what the parks look like and we weren't able to plant flowers or maintain the shrubs or clean the public restrooms. So, you know, there is always a give and take in every department, but of course we could always use more transit funding. Fortunately, that seems to be an area that both the federal and the provincial governments like to step up and provide additional funding in those areas. So we do benefit. We take whatever they give us and invest in greening our fleets and electric buses and building trails and providing new lighting and cycling paths and cycling routes, etc. So we do what we can with what we have, and we try to be very cautious financial stewards of your taxpayer dollars. We're very responsible here. And I don't know if anyone else wants to comment about, you know, transferring from one department to another, perhaps to prop up transit, because I know our listener tonight is very interested in enhancing our transit budget. Anyone want to pick that one up? What the impact would be from taking from one department to another?
Well, Madam Mayor, maybe it's Jeff Wright here, Commissioner of Transportation and Works, and maybe I would just add a comment is the variability of how transit is funded through operating dollars, which is our, you know, our biggest tax pressure is to fund the operating cost of transit. But then there's also the capital program for transit as well. So we have a significant fleet of buses. And so I think when you get into looking at how dollars are assigned through the budget allocator process, having an appreciation for the difference between the operating dollars that are spent to run the transit service and the capital dollars that are spent to build and expand the transit infrastructure network. So I would just add those comments in terms of how transit is funded and certainly the pressures that the city is facing from a service perspective. Back to you, Jody.
Thanks very much. A reminder to listeners tonight that we're here to take your questions. You can ask a question live of the mayor and city staff by pressing *3 on your phone keypad at any time. You can also type your question into the question field if you've joined us online through the city's website. And if you're with us through Facebook Live, you can submit your question by typing it into the comments section within the live stream. William is our next caller. William's on the line with a question about basement apartments. Go ahead, William.
Yeah, I live in a 5-level backfit semi-detached home. And, okay, I can see by the building itself, we each have a separate door to the basement, and you can make a basement apartment, which I have nothing against. But when they start converting bedrooms upstairs into other apartments, and they're making that house into 4 apartments, which we have six cars. They've plowed the front lawn to make their driveway, so giving you 5 or 6 feet of grass at the between the sidewalk and their driveway, and the cars got to come in and turn in and then back out, which is very easy to bag, not the chance of one or two, but five cars bumping into your car in our parking lot. I just find that, you know, there must be some sort of law or something to how many to convert a commercial residential place to an apartment building of four apartments.
William, you raised some excellent issues. Certainly, we do allow the conversion to basement apartments. We do not allow homes to be converted into dormitories or rooming houses, which is what I think you're describing. And certainly, we do not permit the pavement of lawns into driveways to accommodate those individuals, those renters. Those are against our regulations here in Mississauga. And I'm going to ask our Commissioner of Planning and Building, Andrew Whittemore, to comment a little more about, you know, conversion to rooming houses and what is legal with respect to building of basement apartments, which we do encourage, by the way, but not conversions into other uses with multiple bedrooms. I know we've had some issues with that type of conversion around the university and dormitory style homes being built and converted. And we do take issue with those and do take, we do call enforcement and try and, you know, put them back to the way they should be. Andrew, over to you.
Thanks, Madam Mayor. So, yes, second units are something that we support legally in Mississauga. What I believe the caller is experiencing may be something that we would refer to as an illegal basement apartment, which we worry about because often those are done outside of building code and fire inspection and can be proved to be incredibly dangerous situations. So what I would recommend caller do is actually reach out to the city tomorrow with some details, and we certainly would go and have an inspection on site. But I am going to turn it over to Jeff Wright, who is in charge of enforcement, and Jeff can probably provide some further clarity on this type of situation.
Yeah, thanks, Andrew. I think you've referenced the second unit issue quite well, and you know, there's a, you know, there is an ability for people to develop second units, which is aligned with our plan around housing. And so all second units, you know, they have to meet the Ontario Building Code, the Ontario Fire Code, and more importantly, the zoning bylaw. So you know, as Andrew has suggested, I think calling 311 and providing your address and we can go out and take a look, and you can we can look up the zoning for that particular address. Which also applies to the second question, which was around residential driveways. So while you don't need a building permit to widen a driveway, you do need to follow certain regulations around that. More importantly, linked to the zoning of your property as well. So that will dictate how wide the driveway can be on that address, and also provide guidance around minimum landscape areas that are also required. So it sounds like there may be an issue around the width of the driveway. And if you'd call 311 and provide the address, we'd be happy to investigate and take necessary follow-up information. So hope that's helpful. Back to you, Jody.
Thanks very much. Our next caller is Shadi. Shadi's on the line with a question about the relationship between the region of Peel and the city of Mississauga. Shadi, go ahead.
Well, hello, everyone. I'm talking about the relationship between the region of Peel and the city of Mississauga. I know this is an issue that hopefully one of those days will be resolved in separating these two. Just to give you an example of duplication of costs, in the spring, the region of Peel was replacing some pipe, and during this process, they had to remove, you know, various sods on the boulevard. Then in the middle of the summer, they came and replaced these sods. Shortly after that, the city comes and replacing all the curbs and part of the sidewalk, which again required replacing, removing all the new sods, and just recently replaced it with new sods. There is a lot of duplication here between the city and the region, and I just wonder if there is anything going to be done, either separating or coordinating, so there is no duplication of cost, which eventually affects the budget.
Shoddy, you're from your lips to the premier's ears. Well, this has been a campaign we've been advocating for some time, and I think you're aware of that. I mean, the original purpose of the region was to kind of pool resources so that Mississauga could really assist Brampton and Caledon to grow and take on those large infrastructure public works projects. They handle the social programs out of the region of Peel, subsidized housing, waste management, waste and wastewater. You know, these are all things the city of Mississauga can do ourselves. We'd like to control our own destiny. As you know, we have 50% of the votes, yet we support the budget by in excess of 62% of the budget we pay for, yet we only have 50% of the votes. When you look at the town of Caledon, they had 5 votes and they're only 70,000 people. We have more than 70,000 in each of our wards. So it was undemocratic and inequitable and basically unfair to Mississauga residents and taxpayers. Plus, we were transferring in the neighborhood of $85 million each year to the region appeal to help pay for regional roads, planning, legal department, which does more duplication there too, and as well as Peel Regional Police. We are paying for the brunt, the biggest costs of Peel Regional Police, even though our usage wasn't as high as other municipalities. And, you know, I've been saying this for a few years, and Shadi, you clearly were paying attention because you know we want to control our own destiny and take our own path, but this is a decision that must be solely taken by the Premier and the province of Ontario. We do not have the ability to one day decide that we will be our own self-contained city and pay for all those costs ourselves. That it would be completely up to the Premier. And I think there was especially evident during COVID, where we saw, you know, the case counts so differently in Mississauga. The experience was quite different than our northern neighbor in Brampton. And, you know, if we had been managing our own COVID costs, it would be quite different. There were times that we could have been opened by our case numbers yet because we were being considered a region under one public health officer, of course, because the region of Peel is our public officer of health, Dr. Lowe. So he chose to keep the region in greater restrictions, largely because of the case counts that we were seeing in the city of Brampton. So if we had been our own independent city, we may have kept our businesses open. And this was one of my greatest frustrations, that we want to control our own destiny. We're ready to do so. We're fiscally responsible. We shouldn't be transferring all that money to the region of Peel to pay for planning, regional roads, Peel Regional Police, etc., when it's basically inequitable for us. We're 50% of the votes, yet we pay 62% of the budget. So you can see how unfair that is. So I hope that message, your message, my message, is heard by the Premier, and maybe in the next term of government, whoever makes the next provincial government will hear us as well and let us separate and do the right thing and let Mississauga be a city that is a single entity, single tier government, and control our own destiny. So thank you for that. And sorry about my little rant, but I think everyone knows how passionate I am about this issue. Thank you.
Thank you very much for that question. Our next question came to us online from Eugenia, and Eugenia asks, do you have any plans to reduce coyote populations in Mississauga? Madam Mayor.
Ooh, this is a tough one, and you know, generally we've seen an increase of activity reported to us about coyotes, and there was one example of a young woman who had been bitten, and they're clearly written about in the news. And we do have measures in place right across the city, and we offer advice and tips on how to, you know, what to do, not to do, should you run into a coyote. But Jeff Wright, I think your department manages the coyote population, and what advice do you have for our residents to when they may encounter a coyote, and what plans does the city have to manage the coyote population? Thank you.
Thanks Mayor Crombie. Our animal services section really manages the issue of urban coyotes. And back in April of 2021, so earlier this spring, we presented the General Committee with a report that really spoke to our enhanced coyote management strategy of how the city will be dealing with, really living with coyotes in Mississauga. And, you've mentioned this, Madam Mayor, we have seen a significant increase in coyote sightings. And that's largely due to the launch of our coyote sightings interactive map. So that's available on the city's website where you can sort of report coyote sightings, but also get a sense of where coyote activity is occurring within the city. So our program enhancements report that went earlier this spring talked about best practices in managing urban coyotes and really complying with the Fish and Wildlife Conservation Act around coyote management. So we want to focus on a number of areas in our education and outreach. One is about wildlife feeding and the regulations around feeding coyotes, which really goes against really the best practices of how to manage coyotes. So really working with community on sort of feeding coyotes. The next one is really our field response when there is a coyote sighting. Our animal services staff will respond, meet with residents, run through a number of community education activities with residents on coyotes. Give out safety tips, what to do if you encounter a coyote, protecting your pets from coyotes when you're out for a walk, in a number of different areas. So for us, it's really about managing and living with coyotes and, not necessarily going to a coyote reduction program, but certainly something that we're very much on top of and work very closely with mayor and members of council when we do have coyote conflicts within Mississauga. Hope that answers your question. Back to you, Jody.
Thank you for that, Madam Mayor. It wouldn't be a fall budget session without a question about snow removal. The next question came to us online, and the questioner asks, it's getting colder, and I can't stop thinking about when it will start to snow. Can the city please consider snow removal on sidewalks throughout the city? It's very frustrating to walk anywhere when some shovel and others do not.
Yes, it is an ongoing question about the sidewalks, and obviously salt cost is one of the big considerations. But beginning this fall of 2021, we're going to have a new 8-year winter maintenance contract, and the contract will maintain service levels to ensure that snow clearing operations are more efficient, and it includes upgrades, so we're very happy about that, to equipment and salt management processes and practices, rather. We do have 5,600 lanes. Kilometers of roads and on street bike lanes, 1,600 kilometers of sidewalks as well, 3,400 bus stops, and 9,500 kilometers of multi-use trails as well. So, when we look at our service levels, I'm going to ask Jeff to speak to this, but I'll just speak to it a little bit at a higher level. So most of our major roads are on street bike lanes, our bus stops, our priority sidewalks, and select roadsides, multi-use trails are cleared first. So the priority sidewalks are cleared first to maintain accessibility and allow emergency and transit vehicles to travel, and followed by the residential roads. Now, it's important to remember that roads and on-street bike lanes are salted if snowfall is less than 5 centimeters, that's 2 inches for us old folks like me, 5 centimeters, and plowed if salted, if snowfall is 5 centimeters, 2 inches or more. So if it's 2 inches or less, they're going to get salted, 2 inches or more, I should say 5 centimeters, they'll get plowed. And residential roads are cleared 24 to 36 hours after the end of a snowfall, depending on the severity of the event, of course. And residential roads are not cleared to bare pavement, but we make them passable and safe, especially for emergency vehicles to travel. What else can I tell you? So with the weather changing, we're anticipating snow events, could be any time. We also try to control our use of salt because, of course, it's not the best for our environment. But I think I'll pass it on to Jeff Wright, our Commissioner of Transit and Public Works, to talk to you a little bit more about snow removal and also about the programs that are available for seniors. There's a snow removal program, a windrow clearing, that wall of ice that's the end of our driveway. way after the snow removal truck comes through, and then maybe our plan, long-term plan, to remove from sidewalks as well. It really is a cost issue. So, Jeff, over to you.
Thank you, Madam Mayor, and I think you've really captured the issue quite well in terms of winter maintenance, and I know something that we all sort of dread coming, the change of the seasons, and certainly the first snowfall is unfortunately not that far away. So our winter maintenance program, Madam Mayor, really kicks off towards the end of October. We transition out of leaf collection into winter maintenance, and this year we're entering into a new winter maintenance contract with a number of contractors across Mississauga. And you're right, Madam Mayor, the issue that's being asked tonight is around sidewalk snow clearing. And we do break that down into what are called priority sidewalks that do receive winter maintenance, snow clearing, salting, de-icing, and secondary sidewalks, which do not. And the priority sidewalks make up about 1,600 kilometers in Mississauga. And that's a significant amount. And of course, with that significant amount is a significant dollar on winter maintenance. And as part of our winter contract deliberations with council, we did discuss, you know, what is the implications should the city look to expand sidewalk winter maintenance to the entire city. And that did come with a significant cost, Madam Mayor. And that is something that, you know, that we can always revisit in the future and look at how, you know, the use of the city's funds are best spent on winter maintenance. So it is broken down into priority sidewalks, secondary sidewalks. And that decision is really based on when we look at, you know, transit as an example. So all sidewalks that have bus stops on them, sidewalks that lead to school routes, those are all considered priority sidewalks, and those do receive winter maintenance. And so you also asked, Madam Mayor, about, you know, support within the winter maintenance program. So there is the Windrow snow clearing program. And so applications are open now for the driveway Windrow snow clearing program. That is a program that we offer to help clear the snow buildup at the bottom of your driveway from plowing operations. And there is a financial assistance that is provided for those people who do qualify for that financial assistance. So more information is available on the city's website around the driveway snow clearing program. That's a bit of background on the winter maintenance program. Back to you, Jody.
We're coming to the end of our time together this evening. There have been so many great questions and robust conversation tonight. If you enjoyed participating in tonight's session, you may be interested to know the mayor and some city councilors will be hosting additional sessions. On October 6, Mayor Crombie will be joined by Councillor Stephen Dasko of Ward 1 and Councillor Karen Raz of Ward 2 to speak with residents about budgeting issues. Then on October 12, Mayor Crombie will be joined at 6:30 p.m. by Councillor Chris Fonseca of Ward 3 and Councillor John Kovac of Ward 4. Then at 8 p.m. that same evening, Councillor Ron Starr of Ward 6 and Councillor Dipika Demirla of Ward 7 to speak with residents of those ridings and hear their views. If you live in one of those wards and would like to receive a call to participate in one of the budget engagement sessions, please visit the website mississauga.ca/budget to register. Mayor Crombie, do you have any closing thoughts to share with our audience regarding tonight's budget engagement session?
Yes, I sure do, Jody. Thank you. And I want to thank everyone who had the opportunity to join us tonight. I know you're all busy, and I'm very grateful for your questions and your feedback, and please continue to do so. This was a very interesting discussion tonight. I wish we could go on longer and longer. We always learn things, and I really enjoy the feedback from the residents. If the last year and a half has taught us anything, it's that when we come together as a city, as a province, as a country, we can overcome any challenges before us. But before we ring in 2022, we still have a lot of work to do. My fellow members of council, the leadership team, and all city staff are committed to remaining strong, focused, and determined to make the remainder of this year and 2022 a resounding success. There are many ways that you can stay informed on the budget process. You can find a wealth of information at the city's Mississauga's website at mississauga.ca/budget. If you have a question or comment about the budget, we also welcome your emails at you can send them to budget@mississauga.ca. That's pretty simple, budget@mississauga.ca, or you can email me, mayor@mississauga.ca. We also encourage you to keep up to date on the budget discussions by following the City of Mississauga's Facebook page or our Twitter page. You can also email your counselor directly. They're always helpful. And you can watch upcoming budget committee meetings. There will be one tomorrow afternoon, so you feel free to watch on live stream on our website at mississauga.ca. And they're all archived for your future viewing, should you be interested in doing so. So thank you once again for joining us for our budget engagement session for today, the October 2021. And I hope you enjoy the balance of your evening. Good night.